Hey there to all of our auto enthusiast friends who dig cars and car stuff all around the big blue marble we call Earth. You've tuned in to yet another...
another convivial episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Convivial.
Yes, wow. Sir. Convivial meaning agreeable.
Oh, that works. Yeah. I'll agree with that.
Dig it. I thought you might.
I will be convivial.
I appreciate that.
That's it.
Right. You're living the word, man. You're living the word.
Do what I can. So this is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Hostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Q-Ball Clark. And if you've tuned into this episode before, like maybe you're a subscriber, perhaps this is a regular occurrence for you. Well, we welcome you back, first of all. But second of all, you know that we start off each and every episode of the V8 Radio Podcast with a trivia question that is generally automotive related, would you say?
Usually, yes, generally. Most of the time.
Yeah, right on. Did you, in fact, prepare a trivia question for us for this episode?
In fact, I did, Kevin. And right on. Without further ado, here we go. All right, Kevin, short and sweet. You know the iconic hood ornament that you see on many a Rolls Royce. What is the name of that hood ornament?
The name of the hood, like Dave or Phyllis? Or
if it's Dave or Phyllis, let's throw it out there.
All right, I don't think it's Dave or Phyllis. Do we get a margin of error allowance on this one? Or?
I mean...
that's a new thing for us.
I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you it is four words.
Okay. I'm going to venture a guess, and I'm going to guess all four words.
Okay. All right.
How about the spirit of motion?
The spirit of motion?
Yeah. I think that's probably more appropriate than I crapped my pants. You know, if you had to stand on the hood of a Rolls Royce all the time, you
might. I would be convivial with that statement.
There you go.
Oh, man, the spirit of motion. Is that your final answer, sir?
That would be my final answer.
All right. Dig it. Duly noted.
All right. Okay, well, so, I have also prepared kind of a short and sweet one for you.
Right on.
Going to get right into it. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. For the calendar year of 1967, how many Pontiacs were built per day on average?
Oh, man! For the calendar year.
Not the model year.
Right. Okay, so... so, in a calendar year, you're going to have some shutdown in the summertime. I believe it's what, August, July or August? They shut down to make, to tool up for the following model year. So, there's not going to be too many cars produced in that time period. So, we got a good, I think, 10 months of production, maybe 11 months.
And I'm going to back up just a touch. And say that the actual number may pertain to the model year, right, of 1967. But the most important thing isn't that. The important thing is to guess the average number of day, average number built per day. It could be calendar, it could be model year. My data suggests probably model year, but
I understand.
One little, two little, three little Indian.
Nice. Well played, sir. Well played. Number of Pontiacs. God, there were a lot of production plants in 1967.
It's more than three.
And they were churning out cars. I mean, Pontiac just came off of their most successful year, the GTO, which in 1966, which was 93,000 units.
That's a lot of churning.
That's a lot of churning.
Of GTO goodness.
Of GTO loveliness.
But this is Pontiac wide, not just
right,
GTO.
Right, right. So I'm going to guess, and this is just a total whack.
Okay, that's new for us here on the show.
Isn't it, though? Because usually I'm very concise and exact with my numbers.
Right. And our friend Yardley, the statistician, has generated our 2021 stats. Do you have those handy? I don't have them handy.
Oh, for 2021, yeah. You are 5 for 11, and ooh, I am 4 for 11.
Neck and neck.
Yeah, it's a it's a slugfest.
Yeah. Thank you, Yardley.
Yes, indeed.
Man's always working.
He is, isn't he? I'm going to guess the number of Pontiacs produced per day in 1967.
On average.
On average will be 850.
850.
He
says, wow. That's a lot of Pontiacs.
That is a lot. Yeah. I mean, General Motors was, I think they were number two in sales behind Chevrolet.
Wow.
Back then.
They built General Motors.
So they were, it was a really popular time. It was a great time for Pontiac.
Mm. Sure was.
And cars in general, I think.
Yeah, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Well, your answer of 850 is duly noted.
Thank you.
Here we go. All right. Well, I found it interesting that this is an exciting episode.
It is. And I found your trivia question interesting as well.
How about that?
Yeah.
See if you can make the correlation. So the recently, like this past weekend, a monumentous occasion occurred.
I'm just jumping onto my skin about this. All right. Mm-hmm. So as you made a post on the V8 Radio Facebook page that the engine of my GTO has in fact found its way back home in that car.
That is outstanding.
It is amazing. And you were there to witness it. And I was so excited that you came up to be a part of this and helped out. And it was just great. It was almost spiritual in nature. I know. Not to get too weird or fruity, but it was great.
Well, I thought it was great. And I thank you for the opportunity to come up and help you guys out. Because as you pointed out the night before, the engine has been out of commission on your GTO for how long now?
7 years, Kev.
7 years.
Longer than we've been doing this podcast.
For sure. Wow. I didn't realize it was that long.
I didn't either. I was looking through some pictures. All my pictures are backed up on Google. And they're time-stamped. And the oldest picture of me initially taking this engine apart when I realized I had a flat cam lobe was 2014. June of 2014, to be exact.
Almost exactly 7 years.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And the saga started with the camshaft that went bad, and then it turned into a rebuild.
It turned into a burn valve. Then I pulled the heads and I saw that I had these, you know, low buck, low compression rebuilder pistons in there, and I didn't want that. And then I decided, hey, as long as it has to get blown apart, let's make it a stroker and let's put a forged. Let's just blow this whole mission apart and just go crazy. And you know, let's get a whole forged reciprocating assembly and let's get a roller cam. Mm-hmm. And let's get the heads ported and shined up and all that good stuff. So it's been a long road.
You're like the Johnny Cash of Pontiac.
Yeah, one day at a time or one piece at a time. Yeah,
one piece at a time.
But well, it sure did cost me a dime.
for sure. And that's part of the 7 year delay. Is none of this stuff is without its price. And when you have a family and important things to take care of, then sometimes the GTO sits in the garage for almost a decade.
Yeah. It definitely takes second place, but, you know, we're finally able to move on it. And my wife has, you know, been behind me the whole way and wanted this to happen for me. And she's just excited as I am.
Yeah, she is. I could tell.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, for sure. She's stoked about the whole thing. So I couldn't be happier.
So it was kind of fun. I found myself in the Chicago area delivering a vehicle to a customer of ours. And so I had the truck and trailer, which normally these days I don't do a lot of transport anymore. We used to. We own the truck and the trailer, but it has just been far more convenient to have a transport company, if you will, transport vehicles for us. But this was a kind of a special case because I thought, well, maybe I could drop this thing off. The customer is a friend of mine, so it was nice to see him. Mm-hmm. And then also to maybe swing by Casa de Clark and hang out. And, you know, it's a little sidebar there. Here in my town where we live, a Dairy Queen closed and reopened as a very good Mexican restaurant.
Is that right?
And yes. And I don't actually know the restaurant's actual name because its nickname is Casa DQ.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, that's perfect.
And you live in Casa de Q.
Yeah, that's true.
The house of
Q. Oh, the parallels are never ending.
Right. So after I dropped off the car, I swung by and you pointed out there was ample parking on the street for the truck and trailer.
Yes.
And got there just in time to see the GTO being loaded on a flatbed.
Yeah.
Perfect timing. Unnerving, huh?
A little bit. Well, what was unnerving is the fact that it took him a lot longer than I anticipated to get to its final destination, which, you know, we've mentioned my buddy Randy, who's been instrumental in helping me along with this whole process. And, you know, if I owe him a huge debt of gratitude. And so he was able to.
Yes, you do.
Oh, way more than just gratitude, I tell you what. But he's got, and you saw his, he's got a phenomenal shop set up out where he lives, and he was able to do a little jostling around and made room for the GTO to, we could get the engine put in there. And we were able to get it in there before you had to hit the road on Saturday, and we spent the rest of the day just trying to get everything together.
It's like not get ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
So Randy lives about, what, 45 minutes from you?
Yes.
Yeah. And so you and I saw the GTO leave on the flatbed, and then we went out and got some dinner.
Correct.
And I was blathering around on about different stories and whatnot, and you're checking that phone. and checking the phone. And I'm thinking, man, this guy's got, I don't know, was your daughter out doing something? Yeah, there was something important going on. Only to find out that you're waiting for the confirmation that the car actually made it to Randy's.
Correct. And he called me, but it was about, it should have taken this guy, I figure a tow truck would take him an hour to get there. Randy calls me an hour and a half later.
Yes.
And he says, hey, I think this tow truck driver is a proud owner of a new 67 GTO. I said, you better shut your mouth.
Yes.
Well, he's not here yet. I'm like, yeesh. But luckily, just a few minutes after that, he showed up. So he was stuck on the interstate and all was well.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because after the car made it there, you looked at me and said, okay, now I can listen to whatever the heck you've been talking about,
you want to talk about
for the past hour and a half, because I've not been paying attention because I've been nervous about the car.
Yeah. I look up and I'm like, hey, when did you get here?
Right. Exactly. Oh, and I get it. You know, it takes a huge level of trust to let somebody just haul the thing away.
Yeah.
But then you did point out that you use the AAA guy, and there was an app, right?
Correct.
To track him.
Yeah, and I didn't even think about that. I mean, I tracked him when he was coming here, and I totally forgot that I can track him when he's getting to the destination. So
that would maybe put you at ease a little bit, but
yeah, it would have. But I was just so inside my own head, I just couldn't think straight. So
yeah. Well, it's funny that I mean that worked out just fine because It was all good. But recently, we sent home a 78 Trans Am, a black one that we did a little video on recently, to a guy in New York. Great customers, become a good friend of ours. It was a really nice project. And we have a transporter that we use very often. He's based out of the St. Louis area near where our shop is. It's called Brad Allen Transport.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy. He knows cars. He builds cars. He's got a nice rig. He's well insured. we don't have to worry about Brad Allen. He does what he's supposed to do, makes our lives easy.
Sure.
Unfortunately, Brad was not available to do the delivery on this Trans Am. And he picked it up from New York, but we had to get somebody else to take it back. And it reminded me of what a challenge vehicular transport can be.
Yeah.
Because you were waiting an hour and a half. This particular gentleman, his car was several days late.
Oh, man.
And he's calling us saying, where's the car? Where's the car? And we're calling the transport company saying, where's the car? Where's the car? And the short version of the story is the driver picked it up from our shop, on his way to New York, decides to get his COVID vaccination in Ohio.
Oh, my gosh.
And gets sick.
Ah.
So he's off the, you know, he's off the job for like a day and a half recovering from getting it. Who says it's okay to get the COVID shot when you're on the job?
On the job.
Whether I'm not making any commentary on the vaccine itself, but
correct.
Most people know by now that there is a possibility of a side effect.
Correct.
Of not feeling well. And this guy screwed the pooch there. So Joe in our shop lit up the transport company and said, you know, what's the deal? They actually sent another rig to where this guy was and switched the car out and sent it off.
Holy cow.
And it finally got there. And luckily our customer was happy with it and was able to overlook all that.
Yeah.
So yes, the anticipation of and the anxiety caused by transport is a thing.
Oh yeah. When my GTO was first being delivered, when I got it from my father, I called a transport company and I just had them put it on an open mm-hmm. transport. And I mean, it took a few days to get here and he would update me, but he'd say, I'll be there around 6. All right. I'll be there around 8.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll be there around 10. You know, it's midnight. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, okay, I'm here. I'm like, oh, good God.
Right.
That is just nerve wracking.
It's like anticipating a childbirth.
You know? Exactly. Kind of, yes.
All right. So the GTO ends up at Robert's place. I'm sorry, Randy's place.
Yes.
It's a very, very nice shop. He's got, he told me the size of the main shop. I forgot. It's like 30 by 40.
30 by 40,
something.
Yeah.
And then he actually built another addition on the back part of that.
Yeah.
And he's got a couple of his cars there. This El Camino he's working on, which is a 67?
67 El Camino, yes.
And it's in primer, but the engine bay's done. And it's beautiful. And it's very cool. Behind that, he's got a lift.
Mm-hmm.
And what was on top?
His 70 Judge.
70 Judge is on top. And below that?
There's nothing below it. The El Camino is kind of backed up underneath it a little bit.
I gotcha. Yeah. Everything was undercover, so it was hard to identify what the cars were. There was another one under a cover right behind where we were working.
Yeah, that was, I think, a mid-70s Z28 drag car, I believe. A friend of his named Gary owned that car. And he actually, Randy's neighbor Scott was nice enough to offer up a garage space for Randy's 71 Corvette that he moved over there to make room for the GTO.
Right. So nice wide open space, lots of tools, you know, everything, just about everything we could have asked for was there.
Exactly.
And Randy has been your go-to during the whole engine assembly, right? After the short block got built.
Absolutely. He's been a real mentor throughout the whole thing. And, so, you know, he makes sure that nothing gets done halfway. He's like, no, we're not doing it that way. We're doing it this way. We're doing it the right way.
Right. Which is great.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so your engine's sitting there on a cart that he built.
Yeah, he did.
Which is pretty cool. And it looks beautiful. It's fresh and clean and the right color blue and the chrome valve covers. And you guys had he just finished making the plug wires.
Yep.
So there was a set of black MSD superconductor wires on there that he took the time to turn them so that all the writing was down so it just looked black, you know,
exactly.
An idea of his detail level. It was very cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
I know he did that because he wanted them to look all black and also respect your property. In our shop, we just take brake cleaner and wipe all the words off of them.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. But this way, you still know what they are.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
And he wasn't going to, you know, wipe your stuff off without talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you guys had a fuel line on there. And so when we arrived, of course, the mission was to get the engine in the car. And the car was nosed into the garage. It was a beautiful day out. It was wonderful outside.
So nice.
And your buddy Robert came over.
Yeah, that's right. Robert came by and lent a hand as well.
Yeah, and we've mentioned him in the past because Robert has a 66 Galaxy.
Yes.
Kind of a light blue convertible that you and him did some power touring on.
Yes.
A couple of years back.
Mm-hmm.
And then another friend of yours, a guy named Chester, came by.
Yeah, Chester. I used to work with Chester at Rico. We used to be technicians together.
There you go. Yeah. Chester shows up in an 84 Mustang convertible with a healthy cam, and it was white, very red gut, nice car. So, as we started to do this, so the night before, you and I were kind of going over the list of, you know, what's going to trip us up on putting this engine in. And you were right.
Yes. Yes, I was. I knew I was going to be right. And hardware was going to trip us up.
Yeah.
And, so, and it sure did.
Now, you have an all-new ARP engine fastener kit on the engine. So those are nice because when you open the box, all of the different groupings of fasteners are together. So for example, all the intake manifold bolts are blister packed together, and then all the timing cover, blah, blah, blah. So all that stuff had been installed. What was missing was the through bolts for the motor mounts.
That's correct.
Yeah. And some of the other original fasteners that either needed to be restored or whatnot were kind of in a box.
Yeah. They were.
Yeah. So I think yours never did turn up, and Randy had an extra set of those through bolts from a different project.
Yeah.
And
they're from his El Camino, to be out. Exactly, yeah.
Well, maybe yours are in his El Camino.
Maybe they are. I'm going to have a talk with him. He says, I know I saw those. I know I saw them.
Yeah. Well, it was very nice of him to kick those down, and then you went next door to Scott's place and used his wire wheel and cleaned them all up and got them ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Randy and I put the... Did you and I put the motor mounts on, or me and Randy?
I think I... I helped with those motor mounts, yeah.
Yeah, and we noticed that the motor mounts were Anchor brand, which is... You don't really have a whole lot of choice these days. You could either take your original mounts and have them re-vulcanized with the rubber biscuit inside, which is... You're going to do a concourse car. You're going to do that. But in this case, you just needed mounts. And I've learned that the Anchor products are made in several different countries. They're made in Korea. They're made in India.
Wow.
They're made, you know, not here in the U.S. And you had one side was like pretty nice looking, and the other side was not quite as nice. And it wasn't terrible. It was just visibly different, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, one's from India and one's from Korea, I think. And here you go.
Right.
So we got those screwed on, and then... the exhaust manifolds went on the motor to get it in. And that's when Randy's like, okay, well, we're going to get ready to hang this thing in the car. But wait a minute. You've got a smashed brake line.
Yeah. I think when I was wire wheeling this thing, I came back and like, you got a pinch brake line.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
all right, mission creep starts in. Let's do this.
Well, and here you go. I mean, that's what happens.
Yep.
And luckily... He spotted that and said, you know what, this is the brake line that goes underneath the cross, or, you know, behind the cross member, under the oil pan, and it loops around, and it's really a pain to repair with the engine in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So now is the time. So we sent you off to the parts store to get some straight sections. Well, first you called, which was good.
Yes.
And they had the stuff, which was better.
Yeah. Yes.
Because we all know how mad you would have been if you just went there and they had nothing.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been happy. Not at all. But yeah, they had it in stock. I brought those back. I brought back some brake fluid, some brake cleaner. Mm-hmm. And then I came back and they said, okay, guess what your job is? And I says, what's that? They says, you're bending the brake line. I says, okie doke.
Yeah. Well, so while you were gone, I loosened up all the fasteners and took the brake line off the car.
Correct.
And then we noticed there was another one that just could have been routed better. So that one came off too. And I got to tell you that main line that went across the cross member there, that's a tricky line, and you did a great job bending it
all
up.
Thank you.
And it fit nice. I think the tip there is get a 6 foot section of tube.
Sure.
Because this was like exactly 6 feet.
It was exactly long enough. It was perfect. It could not have been any better.
And you got kind of halfway through the, so you use the old one as a guide, which is always a good idea. A lot of times the old one's gone or disintegrated. And this was nice that yours was just kind of mushed in the middle. So you could use it as a template. And you kind of got the tricky side that goes from the distribution block bent and then put that in the car and then attached it to the one side and then just kind of made the rest of the bends and attach it to the other side. And again, if you were going for 100% Concours accuracy, this one, the bends aren't quite as crisp.
No, no. Right? I would have bought a pre-bent one, clearly, if I wanted a Concours. But this makes the contours it needs to make. It's pretty close to the original. I mean, close enough. It's not interfering with anything. So, and it joins up on both ends. It's tight. It's not hitting. It's not rubbing anything. It's I don't want to say, quote, good enough, but it's acceptable. It's functional and it works and it looks fine.
Yeah. Looks good. Looks good. Yeah.
It's a driver car. So I can, those kind of exceptions I'm able to make.
Well, and you never set out to completely Concours restore this car anyway.
Correct.
You just need to get the thing back on the road.
Right.
Safely. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about that particular line is you didn't have to do any cutting or flaring.
I didn't. That was great.
To get there. Yeah. Well, it was kind of funny because I asked Randy if he had bending tools and a flare tool. And he's like, yeah, I got a good flare tool. And I said, oh, cool. What kind of flare tool? Like a turret style or a regular traditional, clamp style? Right. And he's like, no, I got one of those turret ones. It's a good one. And I said, oh, cool. Like the Eastwood tool? And he goes, well, yes, it is an Eastwood tool. And he breaks it out and he's like, here's this Eastwood brake line tool. And I said, yeah, that's a good one. We use those. I said, in fact, I did a video on that tool like 12 years ago, I think, 10, 12 years ago. Yeah. And he goes, I know, I watched it. And then I bought this one. I went right on. I said, well, did I lie? And he's like, no, it works great. And I'm like, that's a good thing.
Because, that's perfect. That's a great testimonial right there.
Well, you don't want to steer somebody the wrong way.
So that's true.
We only do videos on parts that we're actually using or tools. So that was nice to see that he still needed it. But so you didn't have to flare anything that day, though, right?
That's correct. Yeah, nothing.
So you made the other line, and it was able to fit the same way, right?
Well, let me think about this.
Because that one was, I wasn't there for the completion of that line. So I think, I was.
Yeah, you were. It was the one that made that coil in it.
Right.
And we were going to use the other stick, but the distribution block, it was the larger fitting. So
that's
we had
right.
to use what I had. And we, but we
right.
did uncoil it, I believe, and made it like a U. Maybe it did get cut and flared. If he did, I didn't see him do it.
Yeah. He's kind of sneaky like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll just go do it and say, here you go. It's all done. So.
Right. Well, and in the meantime, he also made a pretty cool bracket for your proportioning valve.
Yes, he did.
Prop valve.
Yeah.
So, a couple detours, but pretty soon the engine was ready to go back in the car. So, picked it up, took the crate, the cart. The wheeled dolly cart that he made, took that off, hoisted it up, slid it over the front of the car, dropped it in, and it went in really easy, I thought.
It went in real easy. Yeah,
I mean, it's the engine that came out of there, so it should. But
yeah, exactly. But there are different mounts. The mounts I had were blown, just completely disintegrated. But the through bolts went in so smooth, way easier than I thought they were. I mean, the first one just went... was perfectly aligned. It made it to the threaded surface, to the threaded end, and I was able to screw it right in. The other one, we had to jostle the engine a little bit, about a minute, and then it went straight in, and we didn't really have to fight anything.
It was all that wire wheeling.
Well, you know what? I pride myself on my wire wheeling, Kev.
Yeah. Well, and I noticed that on one of those motor mounts that the rubber vulcanized coating went across the opening of one of the bolt holes. So I razor knifed that out just because I envisioned it getting gummed up in there. And,
appreciate that. You
know, yeah. But it was great. It went bam. So at this point, the engine's in the car and it was time to get the transmission in place.
Yeah.
But before that, I think when you were putting the engine mounts, the bolts in, you were like laying across the feet of the engine stand, the hoist.
Yeah.
So I think your back was like on the ground and then your lower extremities went upwards over the legs.
Up over
of this
the legs,
thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's no way this guy's ever going to walk again.
We had the same thought. Oh, man. Yeah, that was tight. It was tight in there.
Did not look comfortable.
No, it wasn't. But you know what? It was worth every bit of pain. I mean, yeah, I was up and down and moving around like a mad person. And I was a little sore the next day, but I mean, it felt great.
Fueled by Tiger Power.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So when you guys started getting the transmission together, I had a 5-hour drive back to where I live. So I had to depart. So you got to take it from there and let me know what happened next.
Yeah, sure. So we got the transmission in and I put the torque converter in and I made sure that it slid all the way in. It hit the two stops it needed to. And we got it in nice and easy. We bolted it together. And then I went to attach the torque converter to the flex plate bolts, and the torque converter was wedged tight against the flex plate. And I'm like, I know this is not right. So I'm like, yo, Randy, this is not right. The torque converter is not going to move. He's like, I thought you got the torque converter in right. I'm like, I know I did. So we ended up having to unshackle everything, pull the transmission back a little bit. He was trying to get the torque converter in, couldn't seem to get it in. He thought he did, but it wasn't there. So we ended up having to drop the whole transmission again, take it out, and he's fussing with the torque converter. He's like, this is not going in. And this is when I had the epiphany. I says, hey, listen, do you remember about 5 years ago when I pulled the front pump apart to replace the gasket? Could I have screwed something up, reassembling that? He says,
could you have?
He says, I mean, if I put that gear that mates with the torque converter in upside down or backwards, is that going to screw anything up? He's like, he pauses and looks at me. He's like, I don't know. So he tried to call his dad. His dad was a transmission guy forever.
Oh, wow.
So he would know exactly what was going on. But unfortunately, his dad didn't answer. So we decided to pull the front pump apart, took it apart. Saw the gear, and you could tell that the teeth that engage with the torque converter snout should have been flipped, because I mean they're offset. So we flipped it, we put everything back together. The torque converter slid in like a dream.
Nice.
We put it together, and it was perfect. By that time, his father called, and Randy says, "Yeah, we put the torque converter in, but it wouldn't go in all the way." And his father immediately says, you got the front pump planetary gear flipped.
Backwards.
He said, knew exactly what was going on immediately. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, that's what we found. It's good now. Got to go.
Yeah. Well, and doing this with the car on the ground, jacked up on jack stands and crawling underneath to pull a transmission out sucks for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you got past that.
Yeah, he has this ATV jack that he used that doubles as a transmission jack, and it made the job a lot easier, which is nice. So
that is nice.
Yeah, it rolls around pretty easy. So we got all that together. We got the drive shift.
I've had a similar experience. I think I might have mentioned this a long time ago, but many years ago, I had an 86 Mustang GT convertible.
Yeah.
With a 5-speed Tremec T5 in it.
Yeah, you had that out in California, right?
Yes. Yeah. And when I got the car, it developed a transmission leak really, really quickly out of the tail shaft. And our good friend Terry McGeehan was working. I worked with him at Hot Rod, and Terry's a big Mustang guy. And he's like, yeah, you know, that rear bushing goes out of these T5s, and then there's play, and then the seal doesn't work, and it leaks. So chances are you got a bad bushing back there. You got to change that out. So, okay, great. Got some parts, put the car up in the air at the Hot Rod shop, take the trans out. And I had two T5s at that point. Our friend Wayne Cook had given me another T5 nice. From a different project. So I take them both apart, and I'm taking the best parts of each and putting them back together. I put the whole thing back together. Terry's with me. It's like 2 a.m, you know. End up getting the thing back in the car, only to find out I left a piece out of the transmission.
No!
And I can't get the thing to shift right, you know, and it's like jammed. So I go home, Terry goes home, we're both covered in trans fluid and everything, because that's what those T5s take. The next day, go to work, finish work, go back up there, drop it, take it all apart again. You know?
Oh,
and that's when I found the other piece, and I was like, oh man, put it all back together, get it back in there, and everything's fine. Come back to work the next day, and Terry's like, so what happened? And I said, well, I left, funny you ask, I left this, it was like a bearing race out of the gear set there on the bench when I took this whole thing apart, and then I found it and put it back together. And he looked at me and he points at me across my desk. He puts his finger like right in my nose and says, you dumb MF. it burned up, you know, two of his nights doing this too. So I know what it's like to put transmissions together backwards and
I share a similar story to that. I was chasing this transmission leak that I have in this GTO, and I thought the front pump seal was bad. I pulled the transmission, I got the car jacked up way in the air, using a floor jack as a transmission jack, and I get it down. I pull the torque converter out, I put the seal back in, putting the transmission back in. I'm like, man, that went in super easy. I got everything bolted up. I get up out of the car, and there's a torque converter sitting on the chair.
Oh, man.
And I stare in disbelief. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
That's impressive. That's kind of hard to miss.
Hard to miss. It is.
But boy, it went in easy, though, I bet.
Oh, it went in like a dream. I'm like, this is so well-balanced. I love this. So light.
Yeah, it's like 50 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
All right, so you get your transmission in the car.
Yep.
And bolted up to the motor okay and all that?
Yeah, bolted up fine. Lots of room in that car to get those bell housing to engine bolts in.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, we got the drive shaft in and buttoned up. So the
what
drive
about your
line,
new transmission cross member mounts that you had to pick up?
Yep, I put those in. It was amazing how much tighter everything is when it's new.
So, how about that?
It's crazy.
So those are on the GTO. Those are bolt on ends.
Correct.
That go on the cross member, and apparently stainless. I didn't know they were stainless.
Yeah, well, these happen to be stainless. I think originally they're not.
Well, obviously they just deteriorated, which is why you had to get these.
Yeah.
But then a new, very, very high durometer rubber biscuit in there that the cross member slipped into, and that's what you're talking about, it being tight, right? That rubber bushing or bearing, you know.
Yeah, the rubber isolator. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so but we got it in there. I mean, we had everything in there the first time, and then we had to pull everything back out. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to get good at this. So, so we got it out, and Robert was there for a lot of that, and he finally had to go. Then it was just Randy and me, and you know, we got everything together. And then at that point, it was getting late, and we were just kind of looking at everything, seeing how everything is going. Finding out there's a few more items that I have that aren't right and that I need to correct, like the vacuum line from the carburetor to the transmission vacuum modulator is the one I have is not right.
Line isn't right? Or
the line's not correct. Yeah, it has a threaded fitting on it, but the correct one should have a hose on both ends of it because it the one I had, it was plugged into this Edelbrock carburetor, and it was this multi weird fitting that was on the back of the carburetor that this line
like a stack of bushing adapters.
Yeah. So it screwed into that, and there's no provision for that on this quadrajet. There's just a single vacuum outlet that plugs into the power brake booster. Mm-hmm. And then I find out that the carburetor itself was not correct. It was for a manual transmission car, the quadrajet I have. So there's no vacuum ports on it, and I need vacuum ports. So I happen to have, and this is a 70 quadrajet, for a manual transmission car, but I happen to have a 68 Quadrajet for an automatic transmission. That's perfect. That's going to do everything I need it to do.
Oh, good.
So I have to get that rebuilt.
Because I remember you enjoyed rebuilding that 70 car.
Right? I did. I loved it. It was fun. Yeah.
Is that going to appear on the marketplace now? Or
it might. Yeah. Freshly rebuilt. It looks terrible, but it's got all new parts in it. So we discovered that. Don't have the rubber isolators to mount the radiator. I have to get those. Mm-hmm. All those little tiny details that you try to think of, but just don't think of.
What about like the throttle linkage and
well, that's funny.
Return spring and cables and all that jazz?
I have the throttle. Well, it's just a throttle cable. On that car, there's no real mechanical, no like rods or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's just a cable that hooks right up to the throttle lever on the carburetor. And it's funny because this throttle cable almost feels like it's a little too short. It makes like a tight diagonal turn out of the firewall and then onto the throttle bracket, and the throttle cable itself that attaches to the carburetor seems to not allow the butterflies to close all the way. So it's kind of weird.
Is there a different arm on the manual transmission Quadrajet?
It's possible. And now that you just say that, there it might be. So I'll have to investigate that as well. But it just feels the whole, even the outer cover of the cable just feels like it should be a little longer.
Stressed.
Yeah. It looks stressed. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I happened to be looking through the V8 Speed and Resto page at that, you have two 67 GTOs, in the gallery. And I was looking at those to try to look at the throttle cable setup on those. I mean, one that, the Tyrol blue one, you put a fuel injection setup on it.
Right.
And I'm not sure about the other one.
I think the Tyrol blue one we used a low car cable on.
Did you? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the other one, we've got a couple of another. Was the red one in that gallery with the white top?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But we probably didn't have the picture you needed.
I didn't think you had the picture I needed, but I'm like, I know where I can find some good reference pictures because you take about 1,000 per project.
Well, at GTO, I think we took 3,500.
Holy cow.
The entire blue one, yeah. But so those are those little things, and people don't realize it's, oh, Quadrajet's a Quadrajet. You find out, no, where's all the vacuum ports?
Not at all.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That can trip you up.
Yeah, and it did. It got me. And the thing is, I wanted to build that 68 from the get-go. And because I'm so disorganized, when I went to buy the kit, I couldn't find the 68. And I, for some reason, I was in some kind of hurry thinking, oh, my God, this engine's going to start next week, and I have to just get what I have. And I found the 70, so I got the rebuild kit for it.
Well, maybe the time opportunity to rebuild it was what the hurry was.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. It's probably just my own nuttiness. Thank you for the out, though. I appreciate that.
Do what I can. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the return thing, because on my 70 Riv, I have one of those Street Demon carbs, because my Quadrajet broke the pivot point for the throttle, or for the accelerator pump, and I just kind of shelved it to someday rebuild.
Right.
I need a new top plate for it. But anyway, the Riv has been, you know, generally doing fantastic. And recently I noticed that the throttle didn't seem like it was closing. So you'd get off the throttle and you had like that 1,200 RPM cruise control built going down the road, you know. And then you'd kick it. And then all of a sudden, it felt like it would close. The RPM would come back down.
Right.
What the heck is this all about, right? So I take the air cleaner off, and I'm moving the throttle around, and everything seemed fine, you know? And what I deduced is that it was a timing-induced increase in RPM, not a throttle-induced, right? So I figured my vacuum advance was stuck or not working or something.
Okay.
and looked at it and found out that the vacuum advance canister on this is the original one from 1970.
Oh, boy.
It has the red overspray from when they painted the motor to factory.
That's killer.
It's killer, but it was broke.
It was broke.
So I got another advance mechanism. You know, it's less than 10 bucks. They're on the shelf at parts stores today. But to change this one out, it's only a couple of screws, but I either had to be a contortionist or I had to remove the distributor just because the Buick distributor's in the front and it's kind of down in a valley where the vacuum advance was. So I thought, you know what? Let me just do a little thing here. And I know you're not supposed to do this because inside that vacuum advance mechanism is some kind of rubber-ish diaphragm and a spring. And the vacuum from the car overcomes that and changes the timing as you go down the road. And I thought, I'm just going to shoot a little PB blaster in there or something and see if I can free it up, you know? And I have another one right here in case it completely fails and deteriorates, but let's see what I can do. So I start the car up and I pull the hose after I sprayed some stuff in there. I pull the vacuum hose off of it and then I stick the vacuum hose on and I pull it off and stick it on while the car's running. And all of a sudden it popped and the car's idle came back down and it works again.
Very cool, man.
So it was just stuck. And as we're talking, that rubber diaphragm is probably just starting to ooze out the bottom of it from the solvent of the lubricant I sprayed in there. So I don't recommend that. But it fixed mine.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah, until I get time to swap the other unit on. So if you find that you have a car that's not returning all the way, it might, and it looks like the throttle blades are truly closing, it might be the timing.
Gotcha. Good tip. Good tip.
So there's value in this show.
There is value. Are you gonna put a little red overspray in that new vacuum advance canister?
That's a great idea. You know what I should do? Just throw it out in the street now and just, you know, let it get rained on and start to
just get all weathered. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, nobody will know.
Exactly.
Or if I was really insane, I would take the old one apart and put the new guts in it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. Which is another project for the voltage regulator.
Oh, yeah.
Because the voltage regulator, my new one is digital or solid state.
Yeah, mine is too. Yeah. It bothers me.
I know it does. Yeah. That's why I said it.
Yeah, I mean, it works and it's great, but the old one I had was not regulating anymore, and I was putting on like 16, 17 volts. I'm like, I better change this before I blow up a battery.
Yeah, well, you can swap the cover over.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So as the GTO sits today, so we're not running yet.
Correct.
We're close, though.
We are close to being able to fire it. So, but not, I mean, not close to being completely finished, but close to being able to fire it. So I need to put the radiator in. So I need those rubber isolators, which is easy to get. Also, another thing, the trans dipstick tube is leaking. So Randy's going to be able to get an O-ring for me, a proper O-ring, and try that. Hopefully it'll stop leaking. We dumped like 6 quarts of fluid in the transmission, lost 2 of them. So
that's how it goes.
Yeah. So if I get those rubber isolators for the radiator and get the trans to stop leaking, we should be able to get enough wiring hooked up, get the battery in, should be able to fire it.
Yeah, that was another thing that I loosely put on while you were at the parts store was your new forward harness for the engine.
Yes.
And I left it kind of loose because there's a white plastic tree connector thing that's wrapped up in the harness that is supposed to stick into a hole in the firewall. And I found a hole in the firewall, but I wasn't 100% sure that that's exactly where it went.
Yeah.
And I thought, I tell you what, I'm going to leave these wires out of the way until the motor's in. And then I figured you guys could connect the dots. Did you find where that went, or
not yet? No. I'm not sure. I mean, you mentioned that sometimes those things aren't in the right spot. I'm not convinced that it's in the right spot. So
well, it's easy to change. You can unwrap that. It's not wrapped in electrical tape. It's wrapped in a stretch coating.
That's right.
You can unwrap.
Yeah, in fact, it started unraveling on me already.
So you can move the push pin somewhere else and where it needs to go.
Perfect.
Cool. So you got to bleed the brakes.
I do have to bleed the brakes. That's correct. So
you need to put a sticky note on the windshield.
Oh, yeah. Bleed brakes.
Yes, no brakes.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, we've got these like grease pencil things in the shop.
Oh, really?
You're right on the windshield. No oil, perfect. Do not start, no brakes, whatever. So, because you might get all caught up in the moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Once that sucker fires, you're going to be like, hey, let's go.
You might be ignoring your engine start checklist, and we can't do that.
Right.
Yeah, man. But we did put oil in it, and we primed it as well. So Randy has this, he took my old HEI distributor and put a hex nut on the shaft and put it in there, and he used his little speed wrench and just and primed the oil up to about 40 pounds. And it's nice. Funny because you could hear the oil coming up in through the galleries, through the galleries. So you could hear the as it was moving its way through. It's pretty neat.
That's fantastic. Now, how long did it take him to get pressure?
5 seconds, 10 seconds.
Dynamite. Yeah. Some engines take a little bit longer to create that suction and be able to pump. So that's good.
Yeah.
I know, like, again, to use my Buick as an example, the oil pump is in the timing cover and it's a pair of gears.
Oh, really?
And when you build one of these engines, you have to pack that with Vaseline so that there's something in there. So when you go to prime it, it's not just spinning gears.
I see.
I just had this vision of him hand cranking for half an hour. So luckily that didn't happen.
It was fast. Yeah. It was
and
great.
Then because he was using a manual tool, because normally we use like a drill, you could hear that oil moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a neat experience. Yeah. I like that.
I bet. So then you're real close then. I mean, the starter's already on, the solenoid.
Yes.
Your manifolds are on. Did they reach the exhaust or we haven't gotten there yet?
The exhaust is all buttoned up.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's perfect. Yeah. I got the downpipes connected. I had to take, one of the pipes off to get clearance get the transmission back out. So after that, it was pretty easy getting in and out. And then I put everything back together and everything's tightened up. So, we're pretty close. We're to firing it. We're really, really close.
So have you mentalized all the parts you need to get this thing driving and get everything on order yet?
I have a list going of everything I need. And I am about to pull the trigger on all that stuff.
I mean, it can't be much.
It's not a lot. It's just maybe five or six items.
Yeah.
So.
And then you got to rebuild the carburetor, though. That's your thing.
Yeah, I gotta get a new carb kit and a new choke pull off diaphragm. The one on that carb is bad. So. That's all.
Will that transfer? Oh no, you. Will that transfer from your
71? No, that 71 is a metal one, and it's different. The 68 one's the white plastic one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it won't transfer over. Be neat though. I mean, I had an idea of just pulling all the guts out of that 70 and putting it in the 68 since everything is new. Yeah. Like it's got a new accelerator pump, it's got a new float, new needled seat.
These are all selling points.
Yeah, right.
I mean, somebody wants a manual shift 70 GTO carburetor for sure. Pontiac, you know, big block.
Yeah.
Chevy. I mean, that's probably very similar to some of the bigger Oldsmobile or Buick carbs too. Even though the Quadrajet numbers are like down to the VIN, they're so specific for what car that they're designed for.
Yes. Yes, they are.
But they'll work on other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know this 70 is, I believe it's correct for a GTO. Not a Ram Air 3, but a correct, probably base 400 GTO. And I've seen some of these on eBay, like some with a lot of parts missing, and they're asking a lot of money for them.
Well, if you think about it, it's a Pontiac number for 1970 with a 4-speed.
Yep.
Which narrows it down to GTO, Le Mans, Tempest.
That's true. Yeah.
Grand Prix, maybe?
Maybe Firebird.
Maybe Firebird, but not Catalina.
No, not Bonneville.
Bonneville. Yeah. So yeah. So those are all sought after cars, you know. So there's definitely a market for it.
Yep, definitely.
Pretty cool.
I mean, if it was the correct Ramier 3 carb, because Randy is trying to. Randy's Judge is a drag car currently, has a big block Chevy in it, but he is trying to piece together all the proper parts to put it back to stock. And he has the original block for the car, and he has correct heads, he has correct intake, and he has a restamped carb that he's not shy about telling people it's restamped, but he knows it's not, and he'd never try to pass it off as real. Mm-hmm. He just likes the fact that it has the correct Ramier 3 number on it. But if that carb was the correct Ramier 3 carb, I would just let him have it. I mean, that guy's done so much for me. I'd give it to him in a heartbeat.
Sure, sure.
So,
yeah, definitely a big shout out and thank you to your buddy Randy. And he was great to work with, you know, while you were gone. You know, some people just like to stand around and talk, or some people are not conducive to teamwork, and he's definitely not that. We both kind of divvied up tasks, and it's like, I'll do this, you do that, here we go, where's this, it's right there, you know. He didn't have to, here's an interesting character trait for some people. I asked him, like, where are the line wrenches in your toolbox? And he's the kind of guy who can say, yeah, they're in the third drawer, and not go over there and get them for me, not put what he's working on down, go over, get them for me, hand it to me, and then, you know, that's a time where nobody's working.
Correct.
But it's like, no, they're right over there. Okay, great. So he kept going. I was able to get that. And
yeah.
So it was very cool.
He respects your skill set and recognizes it. So yeah, he doesn't have to babysit anybody, which is great.
Yeah, it was nice. And then your buddy Robert, it was nice of him to come out and help. And Chester was kind of a hoot to chat with.
Yeah, Chester's an interesting guy. I like Chester a lot.
Yeah. Retired guy.
Yeah.
And then the next door neighbor, Scott, was a big help too.
Yeah.
And
Scott was solid. Yeah. He's
everybody's real excited for you. You
know? Oh yeah. Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's sure to give me a hard time every time he sees me. Hey, what's up with that GTO?
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, well, it's coming.
He's got a pretty bad 69 Camaro in
it. Oh yeah. Sure. It is bad to the bone. That car.
Yeah.
Clean as a whistle. Super nice.
Yeah, Hugger Orange,
Z28
appearing anyway.
Correct.
Black vinyl, houndstooth interior, I think.
I believe so.
Big block under the hood. It's got a 4-link 12-bolt that they twisted or tweaked somehow.
Yes.
So Randy's getting ready to weld some brackets on a new 9-inch.
Yes.
That's going in the car. And there's a really nice mini tub job they did on it.
Beautiful mini tub job.
Kind of old school style, where you literally cut the original tubs and add a strip of material to widen them, and then weld it all back up. So
yeah, back before mini tubs were available,
right?
Yeah,
it was very cool. Well, that's great. So, do we have an ETA on when the next chapter was going to be?
Yeah, I'll be out of town for Memorial Day weekend. So after I get back, I should have the parts I need. And so we can regroup and, you know, get the radiator in. Hopefully by then we'll know if the transmission is not leaking anymore at the dipstick tube. And if that's the case, we can get some coolant in it and get some wiring hooked up, get the battery in there, and turn the key.
You got to get that carburetor rebuilt.
I mean, we can start it with the carb I have. We don't have to have all the vacuum lines hooked up. Obviously, we're not driving it. So...
That's true too.
Yeah.
But you want to just do it once.
You're right. I do want to just do it once. So.
Because you could, you know, fiddle with idle speed and a few things with the one that's on there and have to do it all over again.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Get the other one on there. So.
All right.
Besides, you know, it lights a little fire. You know, you got to hustle the carburetor.
That's right. As soon as we're done here, I'm ordering my car kit. So let's wrap this up, Kevin.
That's it. Well. If you say so. No, very cool. I'm very happy for you. Looking forward
Thank
to
you.
Hearing it and seeing it move on its own power.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, the final thought on this project for today was that when you said it was 7 years since you basically drove this thing last, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to seem like a downer. My goal here is to be inspirational. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But what are you, 51?
I'm 51. Correct.
51. So 7 years, that was 44?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the better part of your 40s, you didn't have that car to enjoy.
Yeah,
and we
right.
know why. Like I said, yeah. you know, family and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that happens fast. 7 years can go by fast.
It has gone by in the blink of an eye. I can't believe it's been that long.
And I'm, another example of the same thing. I've got projects I should have done 5 years ago and whatever. And all of a sudden it's like, boom, you're down the road already. And it's like, oh man, all that time I could have been enjoying this thing, but I didn't for whatever reason. So I'm trying to be inspirational. Try to do whatever you can now. Just whatever it is. You're working on the car. You got a little annoyance project on the house. Whatever it is, just do it now, because next thing you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, like, holy cow, what happened? I can't do this right now.
Yeah. To me, one of the things that bothers me most is missing an opportunity and missing out on stuff. So
yeah.
I'm not trying to beat you up over this.
No, I appreciate it. No, I know it. I know it.
Debbie Downer. But for all the rest of everybody, including myself, get your butt in work, in motion. All right. So speaking of which, everybody's super excited to hear our trivia questions. Can you tell?
Oh, man. All right. So, trivia time. So I asked you, Kevin, what is the name of the Rolls-Royce hood ornament? And you said the Spirit of Motion, which sounds so nice,
but it's
not quite right. It is the Spirit of Ecstasy.
Ah, for crying out loud.
The Spirit of Ecstasy, sir.
All right, I'll tell you what. You can't have ecstasy without motion.
That's a good point. Okay, half credit for you. Half credit for you. You hear that, well, Yardley? Five and a half for Kev.
This is why I asked what the margin of error was.
You got 3 out of 4 words correct.
I got that 75% right.
Yeah, nice.
And I'll tell you why I had the fear of getting that wrong is Trevor and I have talked about that hood ornament many times.
Is that right?
And I always say the Spirit of Motion, and he's like, oh, no, ecstasy. I always get that wrong.
Oh, that man.
Never sticks. All righty. Well, my question to you was, how many Pontiacs were built per day on average in 1967? And your answer was 850.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty stout number.
It's a nice number.
Think of cars. Well, the correct answer is there were 782,734 Pontiacs built for 67.
Whoa.
Which means 2,144 per day.
Oh, my Lord. I was way off.
Yeah, a little less than half there. So
yeah.
And the irony is that all of us couldn't get yours running in the afternoon, and they made 2,144 that day.
Yeah, our assembly line was broken.
Well, it gives you some perspective on how many what it must have took to churn those out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure.
And as you guys, you know, are taking the care to set things right and make things mm-hmm. nice, and in reality, these things went down the assembly line so fast you probably couldn't even see them.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, they're just slapping stuff on, sending it down,
boom.
Fixing what they can. If it's not right, get it out of here.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Good question.
All right. Yeah. Timely, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is fun. Good progress. Love to hear it.
Great. Yeah. Yeah.
Congrats on getting it in the hole, finally.
Yeah, I'm glad I finally have some real news to share. That's great.
Yeah. For sure. And again, thank you to all your buddies for helping out. Very cool guys.
Indeed.
And on that note, we're going to wrap this one up. I will point out real quickly that we recently rebuilt our RSS feed on how the podcast gets disseminated. And there was some weirdness with things where it disappeared from a couple of the podcast site. Well, it was still on Stitcher, but they wouldn't play. It was messed up. And Spotify, we completely disappeared, and
wow.
I got that back. So I did a whole bunch of maintenance on the feed, so it should be easier, which means you really want to subscribe. So then, blammo.
On every platform, please.
It's right there in your mailbox. So how about that? All right, man. Well, this was fun.
This was great, man. This is good stuff.
Tune in next time.
Ooh. When there may be a soundtrack of a running V8 Pontiac.
Well, there might be one right at the very end of the show.
Oh, there might be. You never know.
It's about 7 years old, but it still sounds good.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm Kevin Ostie for Mr. Mike Hubaugh Clark saying thanks for listening. And remember to get those projects done, and then you'll be able to keep the shiny side up. And we will see you next time on V8 Radio.